This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Millions of students around the country are making their final college decisions this week. With application essays and standardized tests under their belt, they're now preparing for the next step. And some of these students will be the first in their families to pursue a higher education. And these students deal with a unique set of challenges. The profile for first-generation students cuts across racial and ethnic lines, but those students are much more likely to come from low-income backgrounds than their college peers. They are less likely to be academically prepared for rigorous classes, and they experience a number of other social and psychological barriers. They are also less likely to graduate. We're going to spend this hour today talking about first-generation students, hearing their stories, and looking at what's being done here in North Carolina to help them succeed. And we're going to start the conversation with a first-generation student named Judith Rosales. She's currently a sophomore at Davidson College, where she is studying neuroscience. Judith, welcome to the State of Things.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's our pleasure. Tell us a bit about your family. You moved to the U.S. when you were 9 years old, right?
Yes, I did. We are from El Salvador. I have two siblings, a 15-year-old and an 8-year-old. We live in Siler City, North Carolina.
And did your parents or anybody in your family go to college?
No, far from it. My dad had to quit school in fourth grade, and my mom had to quit school in third grade because they had to help my grandparents pay for stuff in El Salvador.
So they're working hard. They're working and trying to get the best for you. How did you go to college? Why did you go to college, and who encouraged you?
Honestly, this journey has been a very, very long one. I was never very confident that I would be able to go to college. When I was in high school, I fortunately met some teachers that encouraged me and told me that, you know, despite any barriers that were in front of me, that I would be able to go to college. I was also involved in a group called Scholars Latino Initiative, or SLI, and with that group, we took trips to UNC Chapel Hill, where we would meet with college mentors, and we would take classes with professors. So that was a really, really great experience. It was like the first time I actually saw what a college environment was like, because I couldn't have this information from parents or on my own. So those were the two big things that helped me be here today.
You talked about not having much confidence early on before all of this happened, and obviously you're meeting some challenges just making the transition into public school here in the U.S. What was that like? You didn't speak English, I assume, when you got here.
Yeah, no. So when I got here, I was 9 years old, and they placed me in fourth grade. And yeah, like you said, I didn't speak any English. The only word I knew was teacher, so that wasn't very helpful. However, like as soon as I was placed in that fourth grade, I was enrolled in ESL classes, and actually there was one teacher that I am so thankful for, and I wish I could find her and tell her how thankful I am, but she was an African-American, and she didn't know any Spanish, but nonetheless, she would stay with me after school every single day to read to me, to quiz me, and that's how I began to learn English. And, you know, and she would even drive me home because my parents didn't own a car back then. So she was so influential.
Did you start having thoughts then about the possibility of college, or did they not yet enter your mind?
No, not at all. Really, in my family, my parents' thoughts were, learn English, get your high school diploma at most, and then help us pay the bills. So there was never really, like, a big dream.
You talked about being in a program called Scholars Latino Initiative, SLI, and visiting a college campus, and that's when you sort of opened your eyes to the possibility. Though I would think it might also have been daunting in a way, intimidating to find yourself on such a large campus. I mean, what were your thoughts the first time you set foot on a college campus? Again, not with going in with a lot of confidence that you could ever get there.
Yeah, like you said, it was very intimidating. I was really excited because it was a new experience. It was things that I had heard about from other students, you know, like when they were saying, oh, I'm going to apply for college. But Yeah, it was like my first time being at a college campus and getting to know college students. So it was really intimidating, but really exciting at the same time. Sometimes it would make me really sad because I'd be like, I'm not going to be able to make it here. But it was just a lot of confusion, fear that I wouldn't be able to achieve the dreams that were growing more and more, like, stronger. So, yeah.
You met the challenge, and now you're at Davidson. How did you get to Davidson?
So it was not until my senior year that I actually was 100% sure that I would be able to go to college, and that's because that's when I got my scholarship, the Golden Door Scholarship. So the Golden Door Scholarship is a full ride scholarship. Before then, I didn't think that I would be able to make it.
A full ride, and how do you get it? Who is it for?
So the Golden Door Scholarship is meant for undocumented students, top-achieving undocumented students. So one of the main barriers in front of me was the fact that I am undocumented. And so, first of all, I didn't have a lot of socioeconomic resources to help me go to college. And secondly, I was undocumented, so I wouldn't be able to apply for financial aid or loans from the government. So that was a big barrier in front of me. But when this scholarship came out, and my counselors told me about it in high school and helped me throughout the whole process, then I got it, and then I knew that I was going to be able to go to college.
So what was your first semester like?
My first semester was really intimidating. First of all, it was very rigorous. I was not prepared for how tough it was going to be. Like everyone said, oh, college is so tough, but I guess I didn't really, I was not prepared at all. I didn't know what to bring to college. You don't have that advantage of students of your older siblings telling you, hey, you should probably go to your office hour, two office hours, or, you know, all the little tricks that can really make a difference in the freshman year. So that was a very big disadvantage in my part. Also, I went through a lot of insecurities, a lot of, you know, doubting myself, just because I knew that other students around me came from top-achieving schools in the country, boarding schools, private schools, and they were, and, you know, their siblings had been there, and their parents were alums, and it was just really, really insecure for me because my parents didn't understand what I was going through. They really tried, but they couldn't really know what was going on. So I went through so much in being insecure. Every now and then, I still feel insecure. It's just a lot of insecurities.
We're talking about the experience of first-generation college students today on The State of Things. Judith Rosales is with me. She's at Davidson College now. You said, you know, going home, nobody there to talk to necessarily who could share the experience. What was it like going home that first time for you?
So going back home was very, it was great because I was really, really homesick. So I just wanted to see my family and spend some time with my family. However, there were a lot of kind of arguments just because my parents, like, they really believe in, like, being with the family and all. And sometimes, like, I had to excuse myself to do homework, or sometimes I had to explain something about college, and they wouldn't really understand me. So there were a lot of arguments.
Things getting better now?
Yeah, it's getting way better now. I think that they're more understanding, and we can talk more, and they won't understand me, so...
What are the things at Davidson that helped you succeed? What were the things that helped you get through or are helping you get through?
So I was fortunate enough to meet some professors and staff that really care for their student success. Coming here, I only had one friend, and I couldn't really trust him on my situation. So meeting professors here and making this close network with them was very helpful to me. I now, you know, I tell them everything, and not just the classwork, but also like personal life, because they're very helpful. They're able to lead me through the right people. So that has been my main support system here at Davidson.
What do you think are your biggest challenges now moving forward?
I have one huge big challenge, and that's the fact that I'm still undocumented. And so I really want to be a physician's assistant, but I don't know if I would be able to do it. Sometimes I go to sometimes the directors of programs come to Davidson to talk to us about their program, and I usually say afterwards and ask them, hey, so what's your policy with undocumented students? Do you accept them? And they're usually, no, I'm sorry, we can't really do that. So it's very disappointing because, you know, I'm doing all this work and I don't know if it's going to pay off. I mean, I know that, you know, just being here is a blessing. I'm already privileged by being here. And so something will happen, but, you know, I still feel those insecurities that I'm not going to be able to achieve the dreams that I want to achieve.
Yeah, hang in there, Judith. Thank you so much for talking with us.
No, thank you for having me.
Judith Rosales is a first-generation college student. She's finishing up her sophomore year at Davidson College. Undocumented students are just a subset of the millions of first-generation students around the country. We're going to continue our conversation about the array of first-generation college students on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The college admissions process is confusing and overwhelming for many students, let alone those whose families are unfamiliar with the college environment. And because they may not know anyone who's been to college, first-generation students often don't know enough about what it takes to be a successful applicant. And they often don't know how to seek the help and support in high school they need to get them where they want to be. Today we're talking about the experiences of first-generation college students. We're going to focus now on the admissions process. We'll start the conversation with Ricky Ruvio. Ricky's a college advisor in Lenoir, North Carolina. He's a member of a program called Carolina College Advising Corps that employs recent college graduates as college advisors in underserved high schools. He's also a first-generation college student and joins us from partner station WCQS in Asheville. Hello, Ricky.
Hello.
Tell us a bit about the College Advising Corps program first. What is it?
It is a nonprofit college access organization that seeks to increase college-going rates within first-generation, low-income, minority, and underrepresented populations. And we do that with a near-peer model in which we place recent college graduates in high schools to help relate to the students and to help them apply and get accepted and get money to go to college.
So how does your experience as a first-generation college student inform how you do your job?
It helps me relate to the anxieties associated with being a potential first-generation college student. A lot of the anxieties that I see in my students, I actually experienced throughout my college courtship process. And so I help them tackle that head on.
One of those anxieties must be the sense that you're not going to go to college. You can't get in. You're not going to even be there. Was that your experience? And if so, how did you get over it? And then how do you encourage students to see themselves as potential college students?
I come from a small rural town in the state of North Carolina in which I had a really good support system in my church, and a lot of people encouraged me to be successful. So my experience is a little bit different from my students in that respect, because a lot of them don't have that same support system. But still, I'm able to relate to them and the anxieties coming from, you know, not only a first generation but low-income demographic to help make that make that more plausible for them and show them that, okay, you might come from these situations, but the idea of college for you is a reality.
So you are now working in high school in Lenoir. Mm-hmm. How do you identify students? Do you sort of make go class to class? Do they find you? How do you identify students who might need some help?
Essentially, being young in the school, it allows me to develop a rapport with the students. And so, yes, we do go class to class. We do get referrals, and we work in tandem a lot of the times with the counselors. we understand that the current state of counseling in the United States is about a 450-to-1 ratio. That doesn't give the counselors a lot of time to focus on the college admissions process. And so we come in as specialists and help redirect the students and help guide the students in terms of all things college.
You know, it's one thing to offer help for people who know they need some help. And then they say, oh, well, let's go see Ricky. He's got some answers. But if the problem is I've never seen myself as a college student, nobody at home talks about it, how do you make that match work? And where do you start with students whose first problem is just imagining themselves in college?
I like to focus, and I think a lot of other advisors like to focus on micro affirmations that they do deserve to go to college. So I focus on things like GPA and their standardized test scores. And I sit down with a student, I say, hey, you have a such and such GPA and such test score. This indicates to me that you are college ready. And from students hearing that, they kind of rationalize the fact that, okay, maybe I did do the work to go to college, and now that is a possibility for me. And then it essentially becomes a conversation I can't and I don't know how to, and it becomes a conversation of I can, I want to, now how do I get there? And so I help them, and advisors help them throughout that process.
So what are some of the anxieties and some of the challenges that they want you to help them with?
One of those anxieties is that the fact that they feel like they wouldn't belong in a college environment. And so they don't realize that a lot of colleges are taking initiative and trying to address the problem head on and bringing in a diverse amount of students from all sorts of backgrounds. And so that they would have a place should they seek to want to go to a college. And so that's one of the anxieties. But to be honest, the biggest anxiety is the cost. We currently sit at a $1.2 trillion and growing college debt rate in the United States. And so they know that, and they know that the cost of college is rising. And so I help them address those anxieties through, you know, telling them that financial aid is available should you need it, telling them that scholarships are available should you need it, and loans only if you need them as in meet.
And it seems to be one of the advantages of not knowing anybody who's been to college is that you don't really fully appreciate the nightmare that is the admissions policy and process, I would say, filling out all those applications. But at some point, you're going to figure that out. How do you make that process less painful, or do you? I mean, can you?
Well, it more so becomes a conversation of empowering the students to be able to advocate for themselves on paper. In my personal experience, that is really hard to do within first-generation populations because they fundamentally don't believe that they should go to college or that is a possibility for them. So if the better the rapport is with the students, the more I get to know them, the more I know how to help them. And so once they reach out to me and once they say that there's that inherent need within that process, that's where I go and meet them head on, whether that be helping them get registered to take an SAT or SAT or ACT, helping them find out about fee waivers, should they need those fee waivers, helping them be cognizant of deadlines that are coming up, and then finally, after they get accepted, hopefully, applying for financial aid to afford themselves the opportunity to go to college.
See, it would help me if they would just let me fill out the applications in math class. And so instead of going to math, you could do out your applications. I had to fill out 30 of them. But I guess you can't do that in where you are. Parental. Now, obviously, parents are they haven't been to school, but parental involvement, it seems to me, is important. How do you integrate parents into this process?
Parents are invaluable within this process because they provide a really good support system for the students. Anecdotally, if a parent is involved, the student is more likely, from my perspective, to go to a college, or that's what I've seen. Students without those parents need advocates within the community, within the school, within churches, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And whenever those advocates are present, the students are more likely to go. So whether it be a parent, whether it be a teacher, whether that be a counselor that is there to advocate for the student and help empower that student. And in some cases, that person is me. In a lot of cases, that person is me. That is an invaluable resource to help them rationalize and again, to help them want to seek to want to go to college.
Well, we're talking about the challenges of first-generation college students today, and we're joined now by a college admissions counselor, Hannah Brown. Hannah is a senior assistant director of admissions at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington. She's been working in their admissions office for the past 10 years, and she joins us from our partner station, WHQR, in Wilmington. Hannah, welcome to The State of Things.
Hi, good afternoon.
How have you seen the focus on admitting first-generation students evolve over the course of just your 10 years, and if so, how?
Yes, I think the way we work with first-generation students has evolved. On the application on the front end, we've always asked students the highest level of education that their parents have received. But when we review a student's application, that's something that we pay a little bit more or a closer attention to. One thing that UNC Wilmington does a great job of is making sure that we're providing an increased access, especially to North Carolina students. We try to attend every college fair we possibly can. And if we are unable to attend a certain high school program, we try to meet with them virtually, meet classrooms online, so that we can work with students as much as possible. I think that as an admissions office, we have a better understanding of what it means to be a first-generation student and have a better understanding of how better to assist students in navigating that admissions process.
Well, I'm going to stop you there. I do want you to continue, but I want to ask you about something you've already said, which is that you do take into account the fact that students might not have had parents who went to college. How do you take that into account, knowing that, you know, you have to look at whether or not or consider whether a student's going to do well in college, whether it's a good fit. So how do you make that calculation?
Well, several things. Our admissions process is a holistic review. So we take into consideration everything that a student submits with their application profile. So information beyond the GPA, standardized test scores, and ACT and SAT. While we recognize that those are good indications of student success in our university and in our community, we also do review a student's essay and short answer response and try to gauge their interest and desire to attend UNC Wilmington. We understand that a student who has the drive and determination will be committed to the classroom. We also require a letter of recommendation from a school counselor, a core teacher, or a principal, someone who knows the student well and can write about their academic ability and their drive. That's something that a standardized test score doesn't always necessarily show. And that can help weigh our admissions decisions greatly.
Well, let me talk to Ricky Ruvio right now, who's in Asheville. He's actually a college advisor in Lenoir, North Carolina, in the high schools. Is it important to you, and do you make it a point to make connections with the universities, with the admissions folks, to try to make that connection and follow up on your students?
Oh, absolutely. We'd like to know what the colleges are looking for in terms of the admission process, and we want to help the students get up to par in terms of their admission standards and then successfully apply and be accepted to those institutions. So it's in everybody's benefit. We need to get a student matched up to that institution, and the better that they match, the better they assimilate into those particular institutions.
And Hannah Brown, you indicated that you pay special attention to first-generation students in those first phases of the admissions process. How does that work?
So we want to make sure that we're providing the best information possible. We appreciate when students get in touch with us and remain in contact with us regarding their academic profile. When we know where a student stands with their GPA, the types of classes they're taking, the scores that they received, we can better advise them on that application process. We at UNC Wilmington provide a really good detail or raw truth, if you will, of their admissions competitiveness and work with them to make sure if they need some additional time for testing or, you know, maybe they didn't do as well perform as well academically in their junior year, work with them on the best time to apply. Our process, we want to make sure that students are successful. We're not looking to deny students. We're looking to bring students into our community and to kind of reach their goals. And so we work on the front end to advise students as best as possible so that we're not setting them up for failure.
You heard Ricky say that one of the biggest concerns for high school students is just financing college. How do you approach issues of financial feasibility?
We understand a great that there's a great deal of anxiety when it comes to paying for college, especially with the increasing costs of tuition. We encourage all students eligible to complete that FAFSA form and to apply for scholarships, not just scholarships within UNC Wilmington, but scholarships that are available nationally. Personally, when I'm attending a college fair and I talk with current students about financing college, I tell them my personal story. I am just like Ricky, a first-generation student, and I will talk with them and say, you know, these are the scholarships that I applied for, and I learned very quickly the more you hear no, the less it hurts, so apply for every scholarship. And I speak with them about the student loans that I took out and what it is like to pay for student loans after graduation. One of the things that I really want students to understand is that taking a loan, having student debt, while it may seem daunting, it's an investment in yourself and an investment in your future. And I think that helps, by sharing my personal story, it helps to ease some of that anxiety that comes with paying for college.
Yeah, and I think the latest figures still indicate that if you're, no matter how, the college costs are certainly rising. It's getting very expensive. It's also getting harder to find a job. But still, college people with college degrees end up doing far better than those without, even after they take on those costs. So, you know, the statistics back up what you say. Hannah, what are some of the things that first-generation students can do to make themselves more appealing as candidates?
One of the things I think first-generation students really need to make sure to do, and they don't realize, is to contact admissions offices, join the mailing lists, go on campus tours if it's feasible, but also try to form relationships with their admissions counselors. When we have the opportunity to get to know a student and to get to know their desires to attend UNC Wilmington and their admissions profile, we can better advise students and we can better work with students to fight, if you will, to bring them into our community. So I think one of the first things that they need to do is keep in touch with us. First-generation students also, especially at a college fair, they don't necessarily know the right questions to ask admissions counselors. So it's not just asking an admissions counselor representing such and such university if they have a good English program, but asking them what makes their English program so competitive. Every single college at a college fair is going to say, we have the best program, but they need to be saying or answering why their college program, their academic program, is one of the best in the state.
We are talking about the challenges of first-generation college students today on The State of Things. Hannah Brown is with us, a senior assistant director of admissions, and Hannah at UNC Wilmington. And you were telling us some of the things that students can do to make themselves more appealing, to make their applications stand out. What are some of the other things?
We just really want to, as we're becoming more competitive year after year, we want to make sure that we're providing the best information to students as soon as possible. So it's joining mailing lists, it's visiting those campus tours once again, and it's also just making sure that the students themselves are finding the best fit for their university. If a student is applying to UNC Wilmington for architecture, it may not be the best fit. We do not offer an architecture program. So students in general, and especially first-generation students, also need to make sure that they're doing their research on different colleges in North Carolina and nationally to make sure that it is that proper fit for them.
Ricky Rubio, Hannah warns against being the stealth applicant, just dropping off your application and then waiting to hear back. Obviously, what you're saying, Hannah, is stay in touch, keep in contact, and then ask questions. But, Ricky, I would imagine that's one of the anxieties, the whole idea of you talking to people at a college, a university, people with whom you've not had much experience but may have some sense of who these people are. That might be the hard part for them, is it?
Oh, absolutely. Again, it goes back to the confidence issue that Judith addressed earlier within this program. They don't have a lot of it, and so there are some anxieties when it comes to reaching out to these colleges or calling up admissions or calling up financial aid and sending these emails. So, that's something that is addressed on a daily basis. And again, it's the job of the advisor to kind of redirect them and empower them to the point in which they are comfortable doing that. And also, you know, part of our job is to advocate for them to do that, and self-advocacy is a big point, part of it.
And Hannah, I understand that at UNCW you've got a program that helps people who may be on the cusp, a kind of a separate category for people who didn't quite make it but are close.
We do. This is called our Teal Tracks program, and this it gives us the ability to work with students who weren't granted that offer of admission when they applied as a first-year student. So when we deny a student, if we have a good idea and a good feeling that they would be successful in our community, we don't want to just deny them. So we, in our letter, strongly recommend that they take advantage of the opportunity to transfer, to go to a community college, to meet the kind of required courses to apply as a transfer student to UNC Wilmington, which can take as little as a year. If a student decides to be a part of the Teal Tracks program, they enter into our communication plan in which we remain in contact with them via email throughout their entire first year at the community college and discuss with them the types of classes that they need to be taking to be competitive in the transfer student admission process. 45% of the students who start classes at UNC Wilmington in the fall are transfer students, and that's something that we're really proud of because we are providing the support not only for students to successfully transfer into our community, but also to sustain students on our campus.
I want to thank you both for being on the program today. Hannah Brown is Senior Assistant Director of Admissions at the University of North Carolina, Wilmington, and Carolina College Advising Corps member Ricky Rubio, who joined us from WCQS in Asheville, Hannah Brown, WHQR in Wilmington. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
Just ahead, we continue our conversation about first-generation college students and examine why they are less likely to graduate and what's being done to help that. Please stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stacio, and we're talking about the challenges faced by first-generation college students today. Even after first-gen students jump the college admissions hurdles and enroll in school, they continue to face unique difficulties. With rising tuition costs, many must choose two-year and community colleges over four-year institutions. Others take multiple student loans. They take side jobs, all to make ends meet. And while much of the conversation around the American college experience has been focused on access, we're going to close out this conversation by talking about degree completion and retention. What does it take for first-generation students to finish school? Joining me first is Gabby McCutcheon. She's an assistant dean for student engagement and transitions at Durham Technical Community College, and she teaches a course on college success. Gabby, welcome to the State of Things.
Hi, thank you.
So you just heard Hannah Brown say one of the things they do at UNCW, if you didn't make it in on the first try, is really recommend we go to community college. How common is that as a path in general? She said 45% of the admissions at UNCW. Generally, how common a path is that?
University transfer is a major goal for many of our students at community colleges, and at Durham Tech in particular. It's not the only goal. Many of our students come to us looking for a career path as well, but certainly we serve a lot of students who are interested in transferring to universities.
Well, I was going to ask you how that if it's different for you for those students and how you work with students who are on a path to go to a four-year versus those who are looking for training, job training, that sort of thing. Do you have different programs? Do you have different ways of handling students?
Sure, we do. We have some general programs that benefit all of our students, but we can tailor those for our university transfer track students. All of our students start with a Connect session, a new student orientation, and this prepares them for completing the rest of the enrollment process. So helping them to understand how they can demonstrate placement into their college classes, how to prepare for placement testing, how to apply for financial aid, how to use our online registration systems, etc. And then once they're enrolled, most of our students begin with an ACA 122, a college transfer success course. And this course helps those students to better articulate what their goals are and then to figure out what resources will support them in achieving those goals. We use a pretty rigorous process of goal discernment to help them synthesize reflection on their individual goals and research on how they can achieve those goals. For many of those students, that includes transferring to senior institutions and even earning postgraduate degrees. We also, in that course, introduce students to the language and cultural norms of higher education. What is a GPA and why does it matter? What does a college transcript look like? What your transcript says about you to those accepting universities or to a potential employer one day? How do you get financial aid and then how do you keep it once you are eligible for it? And then the course also teaches students learning strategies to help them succeed academically, time management, note-taking, things like that.
And, of course, part of the good news is they've already done part of this process, which is to apply to a to a college and they've gotten in, they've, you know, gone to a different institution, done a lot of that on their own. So some of that is out of the way. You are a first-generation student yourself, and you bring those experiences, I assume, to the classroom?
I do. I tell my students on the first day of class that I was a first-generation student. I do this to build a little credibility and trust on that first day. I tell them that I was very fortunate to have a lot of support from my family and community, and the expectation was that I would go to college. And I went to the college where my mother worked, so I got to go tuition-free as well, which was a huge benefit. But then once I got there, I was a little bit on my own and made some bad decisions about what my major should be. I listened to my father, who said I should be a pharmacist. I had no interest in pharmacy or in all of the chemistry classes required, so I wasted a lot of time. I also was really intimidated. This has come up in some of the previous speakers, intimidated to go and speak to my professors during office hours, and I didn't understand how advising worked or why it mattered which classes I took. And I share this with my students so that they will hopefully feel encouraged to come and ask questions of me, because I want to be that resource for them, and to show that that it's possible to succeed even as a first-generation student. So
those are all great tips, and they help students stay in college once they're there. And retention, of course, is an important part of this equation. We're going to continue that conversation now about first-generation students with Cynthia Demetrio. She's the Director for Retention at UNC Chapel Hill. Cynthia, welcome to the State of Things. Good to have you here.
Thank you.
You've been working at UNC since 2007. Tell us about this whole program now, a retention program. You actually started the program there at UNC Chapel Hill, right?
Yes, I did. And part of our retention suite of services for undergraduates includes Carolina First, which is a large umbrella program full of programs and supports for first-generation college students at Carolina, which we currently have about 3,200 first-gen students.
So tell us about, because the reason I think you did this, as I understand it, is you took a look at some of the data, which is fairly alarming. Tell us about it.
Yeah, so being from a low-income family or first-generation college students are some of the strongest predictors of failure to persist at the university. So when we looked at this data shortly after I arrived in 2007, we didn't understand exactly what was going on. So instead of taking a deficit approach, we decided, well, let's understand the students who are making it and who are succeeding and try to study them and identify the perspectives, behaviors, and habits of our most successful first-generation college students. And that so led to our program, Carolina First, which is really a strengths-based approach to encouraging degree completion.
So what are some of those strengths? Who makes it? Who had been making it before you intervened?
Well, what we found is that students have to find that the culture is supportive of them and is an inviting place, not just for them, but also for their family. So one thing that we try to do is for all of our events and programs on campus, we extend the invitation not just to the student, but to the student's family, whomever they consider their family. Sometimes the family is consisting of parents, sometimes it's siblings, sometimes it's intergenerational, and sometimes it's support members like counselors from community colleges. So we invite all of those community members to come to campus and be a part of the student's experience. We also found that sometimes work can be a detriment to student success, but sometimes it's really helpful. It helps maintain a schedule. So it is okay to work, but there's an appropriate balance that needs to be reached. So if students tend to work in the area of 10 to 15 hours per week, that can be very helpful. But beyond 15 hours per week, it starts to detract from the student's experience.
It's interesting and in many ways intuitive that you would invite then community and support members to those activities. But I'm guessing they face some of the same insecurities about being on a college campus. Do many community members or parents in particular take them up on the offer? Do they come?
They do, but you raise a really important point. And Carolina is a place that's steeped in cultural tradition, and often that is a huge incentive for students. It increases sense of belonging and connection to the university, but it could also serve as a barrier to first-generation college students. So what we try to do with our events is to take some of the traditions of the university and make students much more comfortable with them and kind of understand the history behind them, and then just explain, you are welcome to participate, you're invited to participate, but you could also choose not to. And that often helps students feel much more comfortable. They realize they have a sense of agency and choice, and it's up to them what they want their Carolina experience to be like.
Gabby, at Durham Tech, you know, I wonder if you have a sense of what percentage of the students, particularly those who are bound to four-year universities or colleges, are working, and whether they even feel that they can possibly cut back on their hours. How big an issue is that for you at Durham Tech?
Yeah, that's substantial. We have a lot of students who are trying to balance full-time employment, full-time coursework, full-time family obligations and community commitments, as well as their preparing to earn their associate's degree and then transfer. So the financial concern for not just first-generation students, but all of our community college students is a key component to their experience.
Cynthia, how does it work out when you say, look, 10 hours is pretty good. It's actually healthy mm-hmm. to have something else and help focus your time. Mm-hmm. 15 hours is not so good. You can't mm-hmm. afford that. Now what? I mean, how does it work out for you when you make that solid recommendation?
Well, there's also institutional responsibility involved, and that's something we take very seriously at UNC Chapel Hill. So for the students that we admit to the institution, we want to provide every single student the support and resources that they need to be successful, and that includes financial support. We have an incredible program at our institution called the Carolina Covenant, which supports students with the promise of a debt-free education. And many of our Covenant scholars, about 55%, are also first-generation college students. So if a student is working, we hope that they are working on campus through a work-study position and that the university is able to meet their other need. If that is not the case, then we work with the student to find them work that is conducive to them being a student and supportive of their development while they are on campus. And we are in very close contact with our financial aid counselors, trying to find out if a student's need is not being met, what we could do to better support them. So there is responsibility on the student to choose work that is conducive to them being successful as a student. But we also believe at the institution we have a responsibility to meet the need of every student that comes to campus.
What are some of the other things you do at the institutional level to make it more comfortable at the classroom level? I mean, again, you know, you recommend that students take advantage of office hours, go see your professor. I know that whenever they told me they had an open door policy, that meant that there was no time to see the boss. So it's hard for kids to believe that that's really going to happen. Mm-hmm. Is there anything you have to do to change the environment to make it look like you mean what you're saying?
Yes. There are two things that come to mind. One, we have a very strong Carolina Advocates program, which is training that is available to faculty and staff across campus to learn about the needs and the strengths of first-generation college students. And every faculty and staff member that completes this training receives a Carolina First Advocate decal that they display on their office door. And that is a notice to students that this is a welcome place to come where no questions are considered silly, where you could ask whatever questions you have about this college-going experience. It's a safe environment to ask those questions. So that's made a huge difference in our campus culture. Also, the university is doing a lot to redesign large gateway courses, to take lecture courses and make them environments that include active learning and student participation. We know that all students perform better when they're asked to actively engage in class, and recent research has found that, in particular, first-generation college students are especially responsive to that type of pedagogy.
Is it important for first-gen students to identify themselves as such, seek out other first-gen, but also sort of be able to say that out loud in case that's going to be a factor in what this faculty member thinks when they're sitting in front of the student?
It's helpful. It's an individual student choice, though. And many students that come to campus, they don't come to campus with this idea of, oh, I'm a first-generation college student. And even just saying that first-generation college student is a mouthful. So at our campus, we try to say Carolina First because we think that's a term that is a point of pride, that's easy for students to communicate. And if we could create this culture where Carolina First is something that is a point of pride at our institution, it's very easy for students to say, oh, I'm a Carolina First. So I think it is helpful if students identify with the first-generation college student definition, but certainly there are students on campus who are not comfortable with it, and they'll say, this doesn't really apply to me.
Gabby, is that something you address at the community college level?
We don't necessarily have programming unique for first-generation college students, and they tend to display a lot of the same characteristics as a lot of our community college students. So, you know, the example I gave of I tell my students on the first day of class that I was a first-generation college student, my next question is always, do you know what that means? And I get a lot of blank stares. No, they don't know what a first-generation college student means. Then I tell my story and I ask, how many of you are first-generation college students? And then there's nodding and hand-raising, and yes, they know. They're just not necessarily familiar with that terminology.
We're talking about the challenges of first-generation college students today on the State of Things. Gabby McCutcheon is Assistant Dean for Student Engagement and Transitions at Durham Tech. Cynthia Demetrio is Director for Retention at UNC Chapel Hill. So, Cynthia, how have you seen things change for first-gen students at UNC Chapel Hill, your experience?
So since we implemented Carolina First in 2007, we have seen our retention and graduation rates increase. But perhaps more importantly, we've seen just a change in culture and more programs coming to campus. Over the last year, we received a Department of Education grant that was over $3 million, a first-in-the-world grant to provide programming and supports for first-generation college students and to serve as a model program for implementation at other institutions across the country.
You also have, at Durham Tech, there's other kinds of support. You've got mm-hmm. a Dream Keepers program, food pantry. Tell us about some of the other supports you have there.
Sure. So we provide some financial supports to students who find themselves in different types of crises. Our Dream Keepers provides assistance to students who are at risk of dropping out due to some financial burden. So this is a utility bill that they can't pay or a rent check that they just can't cut. And if it's potentially going to get in the way of their academic success, then we've got some funds available that we can provide to students if they meet certain eligibility criteria. We also provide free bus passes to all of our students, no questions asked. They can use the Go Pass on any Triangle Transit to travel to and from campus. And we have a food pantry on campus as well that serves students who have that need. It's open 4 days a week. It provides snacks 4 days a week and then snacks and groceries twice a week. And that has been a very popular service on campus.
Well, I think that's something we may not think about always. Among the anxieties, add to all of the anxieties of getting through an institution, getting through college, the fact that you might be one paycheck away, that you can't, like, if your car breaks down, I can't get to class for that exam. The whole thing can end based on a single $300 bill.
Exactly.
And I would think at UNC Chapel Hill, again, that's something that you sort of have to take into account. Do they take that? I mean, is that something that the professors can afford to take into account and say, in this case, I have to sort of understand that this is a different situation? Can you do that?
Sometimes, depending on the class, and we certainly have many faculty members who are very engaged and have close relationships with their students, but many of our classes are very big. So for faculty, that's hard to take on. Fortunately, we have many fantastic academic advisors and student support services across campus, and they're frequently able to step in and support students. In particular, the Dean of Students Office is really fantastic with students that may be food insecure or have challenges with commuting or housing, because all of those things influence academic success. It's not just the academic preparation or the rigor of the student's curriculum prior to coming to Carolina. It truly is a holistic approach to supporting the student.
I want to thank both of you for being on the program today. Cynthia Demetrio is at UNC Chapel Hill, where she is director for retention at the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Gabby McCutcheon is the Assistant Dean for Student Engagement and Transitions at Durham Tech. Thank you both for being on the program.
Thank you.
You can find out more information about our conversation today at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Laura Lee, Anita Rao, Hadi Mawagdi, and Will Michaels. Robin Copley is our technical director. Jess Clark is our intern. Brent Wolf is WUNC's news director. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.